Hey guys, this episode of Outlander Cast is brought to you by something a little different. That's right, something a little different. It's called Manny with Mary.
Oh.
So as you know, I love to play with makeup. I love to help people feel more confident and creative when it comes to their makeup. But I also know that there's a lot of us that like to have our nails done. And I don't know about you, but all the nail salons near me are shut down. So I have this special membership to get nail strips that are already dried. They're awesome. They're beautiful. And you can see all of the available colors at Manny, like manicure, mannywithmary.com. And here's the thing. For anyone listening right now, if you want to get a set of the Manny with Mary nail strips, we're going to give it to you 15% off. So here's what you need to do is you need to go to mannywithmary.com. See the color that you want, shoot us an email or send us a message, you know, and we're going to hook it up. I'm throwing
Blake. You're looking at me like I know what you're talking about and I don't.
Well, you know, it's like we all want to have our nails done and I have this membership that I want to give people a discount for and I'm going to mail it to you. Okay. I'm going to give you a 15% off discount and I'm going to mail it to you with a little card saying thank you. It's not my big thing. My big thing is the makeup. I usually talk about Minute with Mary, but I want people to feel fabulous however it is. Mm-hmm. If it means that you're listening to a podcast and you laugh, great. If it means that your nails look nice, great. If it means that you got some mascara on, fan-freaking-tastic. All right. So cheers. mannywithmary.com. Take a look at all the available shades. If you like something, let me know. I'm going to hook you up. Just shoot us an email, outlandercast@gmail.com.
Maybe I wasn't meant to exist.
That is not true.
Perhaps not. But I have changed. Remember when you asked me about my last words?
Yeah.
I thought I knew what they'd be. But what mattered was the last face I saw. That face was yours.
Roger.
I'll always sing for you. No matter what, no matter where. Whether you're there to hear or even if my voice isn't able, I will always sing for you.
Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to Outlander Cast. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Outlander on Stars.
Sing me a song of a lass that is gone. Say for that lassie Anne. Mary of soul, she sailed on a day.
My name is Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I hate to admit it. I hate to admit this. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I think I like Roger.
Oh.
I think I like Roger.
I remember the moment when you said this exact thing about liking Jamie.
Oh, God,
you
that
were like,
sucked too.
I'm aboard the Jamie train. And all of us across the interweb said, hallelujah. So can I get some hallelujahs in our live chats right now? Blake is on the Roger train. How many of you are finally on the Roger train? Let us know.
Oh, my goodness.
What, Blake, why,
I'm so
why are you into
right now?
I'm not.
I'm not.
I am so. Cheers. Welcome. Yeah. Welcome to the club. Wow. I can't wait to delve into this episode. It's about darn time, Blake Larson. Okay. So before we dive into this, we're, of course, digging into all of episode 508. I want to remind you all that while you're at home, doing all sorts of things. Maybe you're homeschooling like I am, or maybe you are starting some new crafts or activities. Blake and I have a plethora of podcasts to keep you company during the time that we're all stuck inside. You can find out everything. MaryandBlake.com. We've got blogs. We've got podcasts about Hamilton. We've got podcasts about The Crown that we're going to start picking back up once Droughtlander starts. We're not even going to say that swear word.
Droughtlander. No, it's coming sooner rather than later.
It's not.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not. Listen, man, we're going to be okay. It's going to last us the time that we're stuck indoors. We're going to have some Outlander to keep us company. Tons of fun things. So, and as a reminder, we are not having a finale party. Please do not take a flight to Rhode Island.
Yeah, don't get flights.
Yeah.
I would love to do it, but we can't.
But we're going to do it virtually.
Yes,
so
we will do it.
So keep your eyes on OutlanderCast. Make sure that you're signed up for our newsletter. You can do that by
going to OutlanderCast.com and just putting in your email.
And that way you'll know about our finale party, which if you'd like to get dressed up for the finale party.
Please do so.
Please do so.
Yes,
so
that would be
pick
phenomenal.
Out your finest outfit. Come on, check out the hashtag Minute with Mary videos to help you get your makeup on. And we're going to have a great finale virtual party together. All right, so let's get into the show.
All right, let's do it.
Oh my gosh, I love bagpipes so much.
Oh yes.
Oh,
they just make you feel good.
We
had an amazing bagpiper at our wedding.
We did.
And it was like the best bagpiper in all Rhode Island.
Yeah.
She was in fracking incredible. As a matter of fact, here's a fun story.
Okay.
We were our wedding basically took place outside, and I had this bagpipe in downtown Providence where we got married at Hotel Providence, and it's downtown, and across the street is this mega church. Well, not mega, but a big church.
Yeah,
there
it's
was
a big, beautiful church,
like, yeah. like totally typical New England church, like just awesome, right? And there's this wedding going on as our bagpipe is going, so all these people are looking at us like, hey, what are you doing? And I told the lady, I said, no, I paid you. You're going to play your heart out.
Keep going.
You keep going. Play louder.
And it was a very different wedding. It was the wedding across the street was a very different wedding than ours. And here we are, like, having our bagpipes blaring. So once Outlander came on, Blake and I, along with Bear McCreary, just geeked out about bagpipe time. So let's get into all the nitty gritty about this episode, Blake. Tell us what made this episode so different.
Well, sure.
The
episode title is Famous Last Words, which is a play on what Roger was talking about at the beginning of the episode. What would be your last words, you know, if you were to die?
Mine would probably be, stop!
No, it'd be, I want tacos!
Yes.
And then, obviously, of course, it then plays into the end of the episode where Roger and Bree are talking, and he realizes that he didn't really have time for words. He didn't really have time for anything. It was just a face. And what he saw was what was most important. The writer was Danielle Barrow. You absolutely have no idea who Danielle Barrow is. I know you don't. I know none of you nerds out there
know who she is. It makes me think of Mr. Barrow from Downton Abbey.
It should. Well, different spelling, but close.
Okay.
Close enough. Good enough,
okay.
Close enough.
Thank you.
Horseshoes and hand grenades, my love. this is actually Danielle's first writing credit. The first one ever. What?
I'm just... Oh. Continue.
Okay. The first one ever. She's looking at our cat. That's the thing. And Danielle actually started off in season 2 of Outlander as a historian for the show. That was it. She was the historian for the show. And then she became the executive producer's assistant. And then she became an assistant directly to Matt Roberts and Tony Graffia. And then, in this particular episode, Famous Last Words, she is the writer. And I got to tell you, what an episode. This episode was directed by Stephen Wolfenden. He has directed Man of Worth, The Fiery Cross, Between Two Fires, The Ballad of Roger Mack. This guy is slowly becoming one of the main voices, I think, that the show is using for this season.
I mean, let's be real. With a last name Wolfenden, you got to be used all the time so that your name can be said and shown on screen.
Yes. So I gotta give it to your boy Stephen here. He was excellent.
I'm glad he's my boy.
Yeah, he's your boy. He's your boy for this episode. Very, very, very pleased with this episode. The directing, the writing, all of it was just spectacular. And that's all we got.
Awesome.
So, anything else?
No, that's great. You always handle the nitty gritty. So let's get on into the kilt rating. And if you are joining us live streaming, let us know on a scale of 1 to 5 kilts what you would rate this particular episode. And I'm giving it a 5, even without sex. I'm giving it a 5.
Wow. Holy smokes.
First off, we got Adso. All right. That if there's a little kitty cat in it, even if all you do is see Claire push Adso off the bed, that made up for the fact there was no sex.
Yep,
it's okay.
Absolutely.
We'll get into what I actually really loved about this episode. I'm just joking. I'm not joking. But yes, a big flipping 5. Sign me up.
All right. For me, I'm giving this one a 4.9.
Okay. Wow. I feel like this is... Oh, is this the highest you've given it?
No. Last week was. This is equal to the premiere.
Okay. For me. Nice. Very different tone.
This, you know what? I'm going to give a preemptive outstanding to our girl, Danielle Barrow. Danielle Barrow knocked this one out of the park.
We just can't shout too loudly because our kids are sleeping.
That's
upstairs.
True. But more importantly, there is a lot of things happening here. And the chief of them being the silent film treatment and what they did as a risk for this episode, which I won't get into it too much here, but I thought it was fracking brilliant. I thought it was absolutely spectacular what they did with that silent film thing. At first, I was a little afraid. I was petrified, but now I'm okay. You like that one, didn't you?
I do.
But we'll get into that in a little bit more. Marvin, but I really like this. What do you got for your GBG? You're good, you're bad, and you're great.
Okay, so my good is something that probably was a bad for a lot of people. I dug the silent movie. Mm-hmm. I dug it so hard. And I loved how whenever we came out of the silent movie, it was really hyper-focused on Roger's face, but everything else was super blurred out as he was really trying to, you know, shake his head out of this. I loved that things kept repeating. Mm-hmm. I know that a lot of people felt like, okay, we got it. We saw these things happen. Mm-hmm. But for someone who's battling PTSD, that's the problem. They can't get it out of their head. They can't unsee these things. They can't shake the fear, and it is frustrating. And so as weird and out of place as it was for us to be watching Outlander, to see it in black and white with the old like silent movie sound coming, it was jarring on purpose, and it served its purpose for me so well. Each time I was like, oh, not again. I don't want to see him like have the bucket kicked under him. I don't want to see that again. Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. My bad, and this is like such a minuscule bad, but this is why my it's a 5 and not a 5+, because if it's a 5+, it has to be a good, a bad, a great,
yes.
A best. Wait, good, great, best.
Yes.
So it's GBG, good, bad, great, 5 and below. But if it's a 5+, it's good, great, best. So my bad is, yes, Blake's going to play my bad, okay?
Wait, I am?
Thought you were like pulling it up. Oh, it was just clip. Oh, never mind. Because it was that exact shot. So when everybody's at dinner, it's not dinner time. Yes, it was dinner time. Everybody's at dinner. Marcelly and Fergus are like, oh my God, Ian, tell us everything. Dish man, tell us all about how cool it was to be with the Mohawks. And Ian was like, not feeling that conversation. And I love how Marcelly and Fergus tag teamed and they were on either side of Ian. So poor Ian's already feeling uncomfortable, okay? And then they bring up this idea that Ian can go help Roger survey the area. And they say, quote, it would be a huge help to Roger and the rest of us. I wanted Ian to sit up and say, I already majorly helped out Roger by saving his life right. by becoming a Mohawk. Thanks for telling me that I should do something because it would be a, quote, huge help to Roger. I sat there and I was like, ooh, this is so awkward. Good thing Roger doesn't say what's on his mind, because if that was me at the dinner table at a family dinner and someone said that to me, all hell would have broken loose,
yeah,
my
that,
friends.
That would not have been great for you. I know that right off the bat.
Can you imagine?
Nope.
Seriously.
I can't.
Seriously. If someone's like, can you do a bit? It would be a big help. It would be a big help for this person who you sacrificed.
Would it now?
Would it? You know, because I've never done a darn thing for him before. It's okay. But and as I said, it wasn't that it was bad directing. It wasn't that it was bad acting. That was the only thing. It was like a gut punch in my stomach for Ian.
Right.
And I know that it just kind of rolled off his back, but it did not roll off of mine. Had that been said to James Fraser, would have been a different story. Us Tauruses, don't forget. We don't forget.
No.
Okay, so am I great? Was seeing three men that we love in grief. Seeing three very strong men in different ages, different places in their lives, battling grief. And this is one of the reasons why Blake and I loved the show The Leftovers on HBO. A lot of it dealt with people dealing with grief and how they worked through it and how they worked through their sadness. And it's something that people don't talk about because grief is hard, right? Grief is hard. It's scary. We just don't talk about it a lot. Really, we don't talk about grief that much, especially when it comes to men. Like, we don't see men on screen frequently in pain this way. And I liked that we were able to focus on it kind of in a three parts with these three different characters of Jamie mourning Murtaugh, of Roger, of course, mourning his voice, and then of Ian mourning something that has troubled him. I'll be vague because Ian was vague. There we go.
And I think that's actually quite a good thing that he was vague.
Agreed.
I like it because he's just not ready to talk about it. It makes sense. The emotional math for that particular instance.
He's doing them all a huge favor right now.
Yeah. As you guys know, I'm always a big fan of emotional math adding up. I need to make sure that whatever the character is doing makes sense to that particular character, and it's not just for the sake of doing it. And in this particular case, for Ian, I love the fact that he's not ready to talk about it. I love the fact that he's avoiding it, and he's being very like just shifty about what is wrong because he, as a character, just isn't ready. So I really like that. Okay. My good. I actually have a tie.
Ooh.
First was the DP. Stane Vanderveeken is his name. And
name.
This episode was not afraid of depth. This episode was not afraid.
DP meaning?
Yeah, director of photography. So the cinematographer, if you will. This episode was not afraid of color depth. It was not afraid of blacks. It was not afraid of candlelight. It was not afraid of putting just what?
It was so not afraid that Blake made a stop in a certain scene.
Which one?
To like the one with the candlelight.
Yes, that's right.
When Jamie and Claire and Claire's sitting down and he's coming over and he's drinking. And Claire's saying, I'm happy to see that you've been able to find something that's helping you, you know, be a little distracted.
Yes, that's right.
And Blake literally stopped the episode and he said, look at their use of lighting right now. And when you guys rewatch it, you'll see. Can you explain why people need to point that out?
They're both sitting at a table, and then the source of light for both Jamie and Claire, not the full source of light, but mostly the source of light, was what appeared to be a candle on the table that was hidden by a block. And because of that, you could see the flickering, and it was providing this really warm, beautiful, orangey yellow light for the both of them. More than likely, it was probably just a regular light bulb that was just flickering on and off. But it was an excellent use of light. In the background, totally dark. Just them, orange and yellow, beautiful, just great coloring. So I was really happy with that. And especially Roger, too. These great close-ups with Roger's face and the coloring, how almost the color was sucked out of any time Roger was on camera, especially when he and Ian were together in the woods. Very blues, very like... very cool tones, which you wouldn't and you haven't necessarily gotten in Outlander in North Carolina. And that is a testament to how coloring and how certain in-camera effects or even post, what that lighting will do to you as a viewer. It will set the tone. It will set the mood immediately. But obviously the big one here is the show don't tell aspect of this episode. Primary example being the silent movie treatment. I mean, I know a lot of people didn't like it. And at first I was like, all right, what are we doing here? Like, what are we doing? This is lame. And I was upset with it because I'm like, I was saying, you could just show this. Just show his real perspective. Show what he was actually doing. Show it in color. Give me some sound. Why am I reading Jamie's lines on screen? Like, what am I doing? But once I got past that, and I saw what they were doing for the character, and why it was important to actually show the silent film thing, because obviously, number one, it starts back to what the 20th century date that Roger and Bree were having, or were going to have, and it's a memory of that. But more importantly, it's showing you a juxtaposition between Roger in reality and Roger in unreality, something that is not real. And what you realize is that you are in Roger's perspective, but not only his perspective, you are in his being. It is how he remembers it. It is how he can cope with it, how he can manage to move forward. And even then, not doing that great of a job to begin with. So when he looks back on it and he has these flashes, it's a moment of realism versus, not escapism, but a moment of reality versus unreality. And as the episode progresses, you're able to get more flashes. You're able to come into focus, and you finally see what actually and truly and honestly happened. It means everything to that character and his motivation and what is happening in his brain at that moment. And more importantly, it is a juxtaposition against the fact that Roger loves to sing and talk. His words are his weapon. His words are his talent. That is why we had the cold open with him in class teaching, because his words are everything to him. Mm-hmm. And when you take them away, this is what you get, a moment of unreality. This is big boy television, ladies and gentlemen. This episode, the past two episodes have been big boy television. And I can't.
Love it.
I can't. So, but on top of that, there's another great show don't tell aspect.
Okay.
When they're all at dinner and Ian is there having dinner with everybody. Everybody's praying. And Ian does not pray.
Nope.
Doesn't even bow his head. Just looks straight ahead. Doesn't do anything. And you don't have to be told what's happening. You know what's happening. You see the distinction. You see the disconnect between he and the rest of his family.
Little does he know how awkward dinner's going to get.
More like and culturally, religiously, and just any familial connection. There's nothing there. And for many reasons, obviously. Mm-hmm. The bad, and this is an unfair bad for me, but I wish I saw Roger and Bree in this flashback to 1969. I wish I saw this much earlier, like in seasons 3 or 4.
Oh, okay. You wish that they had like planted this and then this could be referencing that.
Yeah. And like, okay. I understand why it didn't happen. And yeah. I get it.
Because
it wasn't
the scenes
around,
weren't written.
And it is very effective in this episode. It 100%, like I wouldn't change it, but I just wish I had something like this or this in previous seasons so I could understand their relationship more. Mm. And The Great is also a tie. Again, Danielle Barrow, for your first credit as a writer.
Well done.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Well done.
Like, big girl. Big girl pants were writing right there. I really like that. And also, Roger crying while Bree is singing to Jemmy.
Mm.
Again, show, don't tell. I don't need to be told what's happening here.
Nope.
I don't need to be told that Roger's upset. I see it. And as a human, I've been there. No, I mean, not in that particular very detailed, specific way, but I've been there where something else is happening outside of my control and there's nothing I can do but cry.
Mm.
I think we've all been there as humans. And when I was there and I saw that, I said, okay, this is when I get Roger. This is when I get him. And it was heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking. Loved this episode. All right. What do you got? What do you want to start with?
Okay. Well, let's just start off with, with Roger. Because, I mean, he's kind of the main meat of the meat and potatoes of this episode. Everything kind of revolves and is interwoven through Roger.
Sure. So just for clarification, you loved the silent film treatment.
Loved it. And it took you a little while to love it.
Yes.
Okay.
At first I was upset, but then I got it.
Okay. I did. I loved it. I loved feeling awkward. And this is something that I find great joy in when we're watching television, is if I'm feeling uncomfortable and that was the whole point of it, mm-hmm. then it means that they succeeded. If I'm feeling like, okay, this is drilled into me, get over it, let's move on, then exactly, we're feeling what Bree is feeling. We're feeling her frustration with having to be 3 months in and we're still having Roger replay the sequence in his mind. And it also related very well to being in a very deep, dark depression. I mean, I know, sadly, so many of our listeners have probably gone through a very dark time in their lives, whether they had a physical trauma, or maybe it was an emotional trauma, or maybe it was a great loss in your life. Sometimes it's really, really hard to dig yourself out of that pit. And you see Roger try. Oh, like when he's at home, alone, playing the guitar, mm-hmm. and he's like really, really trying, and it's just, he can't snap out of it. The little silent movie pops back in his head then. You know what I mean? He's desperately trying. And Blake and I were talking about, so Blake, for those of you who don't know, was in a very horrific car accident when you were 18 years old, correct?
Yes, I was a millimeter away from dying and I had to learn how to walk again, essentially. And it was very traumatic. It was something that quick story. I got in a car accident. I had to go to hospital. I was in Boston for weeks. I had multiple surgeries, had to learn how to walk again, learn how to do the whole thing, lost a ton of weight, got really, really stupid skinny. And then after a while, I had to get back to life. It was right before my freshman year of college. And I had to go be a freshman in college. And I had a lot of things wrong with me. One of which I had to have a colostomy bag.
Imagine having that as a freshman in college.
Which I don't have anymore, by the way. No. It got taken away during the Christmas break of my freshman year.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. But there was a lot of mental torture along with it. I remember my mother taking me to go shopping with her. And she told me, my mother was something. She told me, oh, let's just go for a drive. We're going to go for a drive. And I was like, all right.
And,
like,
and how recent out of the accident were you at this point?
I just got home from the hospital.
Oh.
And this was like a week later.
Okay.
And she's like, let's go for a drive. And I said, oh, okay. And I was still very hobbled. I was a mess. I injured my leg. And my leg was like double the size that it was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, all right, I'll get in the car. Get in her car. We start driving. And she's like, yeah, we're going to go get some shoes. And I was like, no, I'm not going to get shoes. I was a mess. And she's like, no, we're going. You need to start your life. Like, you can't feel bad for yourself anymore. That's it. We're going.
She gave you the hardcore Brie talk.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you gotta fight. I cried and I cried. And here I am, 18, crying to my mother that I don't want to go into a store. But she made me do it. And mm-hmm. I remember even driving later on, and I would have...
Because you were driving in this accident.
Yeah, I was driving in the accident. And I remember driving later on as everything was fine, later on in the year. And I remember I would have an overlay on top of what I was seeing. Like, so you're driving, normally driving, and everything's fine. You're seeing the road. And then all of a sudden,
Your silent motion picture.
My silent motion picture. It's 100% true. Yeah. I would have a silent motion picture, an overlay on top of what I was already doing. And I had to pull over a number of times to be like, okay, no, I'm not there.
Like Roger touching the canvas, touching the burlap, you know, and it like automatically triggered him into reliving having the burlap sack put over his head.
Yep.
So you're saying that the way that they portrayed PTSD, which we now know as PTSD, you know, but Claire talks about it as shell shock, you know, any kind of traumatic stress that you're still dealing with for long after, you know, you found a lot of similarities, not necessarily a silent motion picture.
It wasn't a silent motion picture with words Jamie talking to me, reading his lines.
You're right, lad.
I know. No, it wasn't that. And again, am I going to say that the effect was a little cutesy. Yeah, it was cutesy. And it was a tad gimmicky. Mm-hmm. But I dug it. I dug it because it wasn't just for the sake of doing it. It was as how it related to what the characters were doing at the beginning of this episode in the cold open. Mm-hmm. It made sense for that particular character. For me, it wouldn't. But for him, in this moment, it does, which is great.
And, you know, Jamie brings up, you know, he asks Claire in that scene that we're talking about with the great lighting. And he asks Claire in the future, you know, is there something that you can do to help grief? Is there something that you can do to, like, stop this? And we say it all the time. Mm-hmm. People on the Ridge, everybody in this show, they all need a therapist. They all need like a little somebody that they can just go talk to. And it really it makes me feel so blessed that we do live in a day and age where mental health is something that people do talk about, that we mm-hmm. take seriously, that, you know, hopefully those of you who are dealing with anything, you can still have access to your therapist over Skype or, you know, phone calls or anything like that. But Roger dealing with this, seeing the different ways he struggled. I know that we have our dear friend Kendra, who's joining us live, and she was saying that she, who's a singer, she lost her voice in 2015, and that scene where Roger was listening to Bree singing Clementine really hit Kendra because she lost her voice for a good 8 months, and sure. She couldn't sing her son to sleep anymore. And, you know, singing is one of her gifts as well. So I don't want to say the word enjoyed. It's not that I enjoyed seeing Roger suffer and pull himself out of the trenches, but
it was impressive.
It was impressive to watch Roger in this pit, in some senses looking like he was giving up and doing it all silently. Rick Rankin brought it in this episode. Brought it and was able. Oh, yes, you were on the train.
I'm on the train. I'm on the Roger train.
So next time Rick and I have a moment, you won't be upset.
No, I will still absolutely.
One day we need to pull up the footage of him dancing with me.
That guy, Rick Rankin, get out of here. I'm basically off the train just because of that guy hitting on fine. My wife.
No, he did not hit.
Yeah, yeah, he was.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, he
trust
was.
Me.
Yes, he was.
It's okay. He's not my type.
I don't think I'm your type. I don't even, I'm not Jake Gyllenhaal. That's the problem.
Fine. Okay. So, Roger.
Yeah.
What gets Roger through is his love for Bree. And how beautiful is that? And how beautiful was also seeing Bree's foil to Roger, mm-hmm. starting off having the tender approach, you know, joking that, okay, well, Jamie's just going to have to grow up, you know, talking about sweaters and aluminum. Like, I loved that little banter. And you can tell that this has been going on for 3 months, right? We had that completely graphic, gross, slit his throat.
Oh, yeah.
What did Claire grab? Looked like a pipe or something that she just was like, I got this, like, boom, bada boom.
She just had some PVC laying around.
Man, thank goodness it was black and white, because you guys know I do not do gore.
That's something about the black and white that is really great, because
I was like, it's Hershey syrup. It's Hershey syrup. Don't worry, Mary.
The gore of it all. Actually, you make this great point, Mary. The gore of it all. It was kind of lessened by the black and the white. It was kind of lessened by the fact that we're watching a silent film. Like, it was a movie within a movie, and it made it more palatable, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean. Like, it's still gross, and you see Roger's blood eyes.
That was just so...
Oh, what a great effect.
And at first I thought, was that me? Because I was peeking behind my eyes, you know, with my hands in front of my eyes. And then when they showed it in color, when they were showing more things, you know, with the bag on his head, the close-ups, and it was really all the blood in his eyes, I was like, nope, that really... probably is what happens to people.
Sure.
But yeah, Claire just like, Claire is, all these people would be dead without Claire. Seriously.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Like, we're just sitting here thinking.
D-E-D, dead.
All of them, gone. And she just is like, got this, no problem. And you think about, did you do this when she cut Roger's throat open and mm-hmm. stuck the little pipe in there and he opened his eyes. Did you take a breath? Did you like, I was so nervous. I knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
But like, I was so nervous. And finally, when I knew that he was like able to open his eyes and be cognizant, I finally took a breath again. And yeah. I knew what was going on.
I would say that, I mean, I wasn't holding my breath. That's something that actually you do quite a bit in, when it comes to movies and everything.
Me?
Yeah, absolutely.
I do it all the time.
When somebody goes underwater, you
hold
breath.
Oh my God, I try to hold my breath to see if I can do it as long as them, especially like Entangled, when Rapunzel and Flynn Rider are trying to get out. And I'm like, nope, I would have died with my magical hair.
Oh man, okay, that's a good Tangled reference, ladies and gents.
You're welcome.
That's a good one. No, I wasn't holding my breath. I didn't take a breath, but I felt vindicated, actually. Ooh. I felt vindicated because right off the bat, I'm glad that they did this. I'm glad that right off the bat they went with it. They went with Roger talking about his last words, and then they showed him alive. Well, I mean, they showed the process of him being alive, and they showed the process of him coming back to
life.
But
let's be real. Okay, so we left off with Roger most likely being dead. And it really was Roger hanging.
Yes, it was.
And then we had a two-week break. And Starz is like, I don't know. Is he dead? We named the episode Ballad of Roger Mack. And yet, nothing. And then the flipping photo image.
This is my supplementary bad. I forgot to mention this.
Starz, like literal image and like what two sentence little intro about what the episode was like. So the image is Roger and Bree standing there, and then the wording was like, oh, follow along as Roger deals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, if Roger and Bree have to, or the Fraser family has to deal with trauma when Roger comes back to life or something like that. I forget what it was. And I'm like, dude.
Way to give it away.
What are we doing?
I mean, granted, you know, like right away it opens up.
I know,
Roger,
but still. Like, keep the mystery alive. Let the mystery be a little bit here, you know, as we get into it.
So Roger, of course, gets this paper airplane from Bree, which, by the way, his interaction with Ian about the paper airplane. I mean, we're going to delve into this bromance.
A paper bird.
The paper, the paper bird. Once again, Roger having no words. So such a cool, sweet moment.
Yes.
You know, as Ian's like, is it a paper bird? And Roger's looking at it like, I don't know. Even if I was talking right now, I wouldn't tell you what it was.
Right.
And having him get to the edge of the cliff. Now, you, as someone who has a fear of heights, I was wondering how you were handling that scene.
Nope. Don't do heights. I can't do heights in real life. Can't even do heights on TV. No. No, absolutely. Remember that? You know that movie that came out with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and he was like the guy who walked between the World Trade Center towers.
No,
he was a French guy. Whatever. It came. I wouldn't see that because the guy literally got on a wire in real life and walked between the two towers.
This was a movie or a real life show?
It was a real life thing, and they made a movie about it.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you critique my TV choices.
Yeah, well, I didn't watch it. I'm saying I saw the trailer for it. I was like, nope. Not doing that one. I'll save that $18.
What
thanks.
Was the weird thing that I had us watch most recently? And you were like, this is so a Mary show.
Doomsday Preppers?
Yeah. That's what I watch during a pandemic.
Yeah, we watch Doomsday Preppers in Outbreak.
Anxiety keeps me up at night. Oh, I watch Doomsday Preppers.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Don't take any advice from me. I am not a medical professional. Please do not follow suit. So here we are. Roger comes to this like cliff, and he just kind of embraces it all, and he focuses on everything this time in color.
In color, it becomes his reality. Once he's able to accept what happened, once he is able to move forward with the idea that it was Bree who was his last thought before what he thought was death, and accepting that moment is what keeps him back to reality. And most of you know, I battled depression in a very major way after we had our daughter. And, you know, we did the podcasts, we did the whole thing, and it was all great fun. But, you know, as we were doing all that, I was really, really suffering. And I remember, you know, it wasn't standing over the cliff, but I remember watching The Leftovers, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. And it was the final season and one of the final episodes where the main character talks about his grief, and he literally cuts himself open and takes out a key out of his heart and says, "You really effed up."
It's like a pretend dream.
Just it's a dream.
It
sounds,
yeah.
If you watch the show,
everyone is questioning our television choices at this moment.
Go watch The Leftovers on HBO. It's a fantastic binge, especially.
It really
right
is.
Now.
Yeah.
And then listen to the Living Reminders podcast with Mary and Blake. And he's talking to himself, and he says, "You really effed up with this with his girlfriend, his wife or whatever." And I remember having that moment, and that was my moment when everything came back to color for mm-hmm. me. That was when everything came, when I realized, oh my God, I've really messed this up. I've really lost touch with my own reality and my relationship with my bride. And it's not that we weren't ever not going to be together. We were always had each other's backs. We always,
no, but I had to have the Brie conversation with
absolutely.
You. Absolutely. I was like, all right, buddy, you got to fight for this. Like, your family's here and we need you back.
Yeah. And that's when it happened for me. So I wasn't standing over a cliff. I was watching TV, but that's when everything came back to color for me. Again, go watch The Leftovers on HBO. It's written by Damon Lindelof. We podcasted about it. It's in my top five favorite shows of all time. It will change your life. It's that good. Putting Ian and Roger together was...
Forget the favor part, but yes.
What do you
a
mean?
Big help, yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, forget all that.
Skipping that poor choice in words.
Putting them together was a masterstroke. It was a masterstroke in storytelling. It was a masterstroke in writing, and what that did for the storytelling in terms of the direction and how things were being told as they went on this journey together. here's a Lost reference when they went on their walkabout. And there's the thing I loved about it is that they're both suffering. They're both having these real issues that neither of them can talk about. And there's no force. There's no one sitting there saying, there's no Marsley being like, "You want to talk about it?" There's no Jamie, even though I loved that scene with Jamie. He was like, "All right, you're not talking about it. No problem. I'll just sit right here."
Jamie.
There's no
king of men.
There's nothing there to be like, okay, what are we doing? What are you thinking? What's wrong? Why do you feel like this? They just could explore together and they could rely on each other to do whatever they needed to do for this one given moment. And then it would only come out naturally the way that it does, mm-hmm. Between the two. And then not only that, but taking their interactions and tying the hatchet, burying the hatchet, tying that to the cold open and how they talked about mm-hmm. burying the hatchet.
And then he actually buries his hatchet.
Right,
yes.
Right. And by the way, I went ahead and I looked it up.
Okay.
Because I had to.
Of course.
Burying the hatchet, as told by Professor Wikipedia, that is an American English idiom meaning to make peace. The phrase is an allusion to the figurative or literal practice of putting away the tomahawk.
American English?
American English idiom. At the cessation of hostilities among or by Native Americans in the eastern United States, specifically concerning the formation of the Iroquois Confederacy and in Iroquois custom in general. Weapons were to be buried or otherwise cached in time of peace. It's when you make peace with something, when you finally say, okay, I'm letting it go.
Yeah.
And it even takes place specifically
go.
with the Mohawk. Actually, they're one of the first people to start it. So I think that was really cool how they brought that piece of history in there. And Rogers, well, Ian was finally made peace with the fact that he couldn't be anymore, and he literally buries the hatchet. Mm. Roger buries his voice. These two together go on their own discovery about who they are and what they can be, and they help each other. What did you think about all of that?
Yeah, I loved having them paired together. I was not expecting this way, and this like timing of Ian showing up right now, but it really worked. It really worked for me. Like, I enjoyed Ian's silence as a matter of choice rather than it being something that was scary, hurt, well, you know what I mean? Like, rather than a physical trauma, he had more of an emotional trauma. I mean, Rogers was emotional as well, but you know what I mean?
Right,
both of them were silent in their own ways. And Ian would not necessarily even open up to Jamie, and yet he opens up to Roger. You know, granted, it's because Roger's stopping him from killing himself. But for him to lay it on the table, like, I saw you by the cliff, man. We're both in the same place. And what the heck's wrong with you? Like, you have literally got your life perfect. Like, you got it. You've got it made, buddy.
You're okay.
Yeah. So let's have a reality check.
Well, it goes to show you how things can get so convoluted. I remember when I was going through my depression, my best friend was like, dude, I would trade my life for yours in a heartbeat. You know, in their circumstances as to why he would have done that. I'm not going to get into that here. But he's like, I would trade my life for yours in a heartbeat. Like, what are you so worked up
about?
Like, what are you so down about? What has got you so crazy? And at the time, I remember thinking, well, what the hell do you know? Like, yeah, you know what I tell you, but it's easy for you to say that. But in the end, of course, he was right. And, you know, everything is perfectly fine. So I love the fact that Ian has the wherewithal to tell Roger, dude, you got it made. Go home. Go home. Stop being a dink. And Roger understands that. He finally gets it. Maybe I am being a dink. Mm-hmm. And that's when he realizes the most important thing wasn't the last words that he had to say, but it is, in fact, the last visual that he had to see, which was Bree, and bringing it full circle.
So let's talk about the other man who's really suffering from grief in this episode, Jamie. Of course, we get to open with Roger's hanging, but in the beginning, we do get to have the mourning of Murtaugh. We get to have this beautiful bit with Jocasta singing. Absolutely beautiful. And there she is wearing
the necklace that he gave her.
Oh my gosh. I'm like, done. Oh, sign me up. I'm done. Bawling. Yep.
Talking to Jamie. Jamie's sitting down.
And she's saying, he wasn't my husband. He says, yeah, well, he also wasn't my dad. But, you know, we can still love him and mourn him the way that we do. And him, Jamie, just sitting down. And goodness gracious, when Sam Heughan cries, a single tear cry.
Oh, yeah.
Like kittens weep.
Kittens weep.
No joke. And it's the single tear one. It's not like the sobbing. It's not like, you know, whatever. It's the single tear. When Sam Heughan can crack that little puppy out, you know, I think that's what Sam imagines. I think he imagines kittens crying, like little Adzos crying, and that's how he gets the most perfect tear. And it's like perfectly shaped too. Like you can tell that when they caught it, they were like, yep, that's a juicy one.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
I love the callback, by the way, the callback to Jamie and Ian in the conversation that they had. You know, it was reminiscent of the conversation they had in the season 3 premiere when they're both about to bury the body of what's his name? I can't remember his freaking name now, but the guy that got hung.
Yeah.
They're both about to bury the body. And Ian is talking about his trauma with
Galus.
With Galus, and Jamie's telling him about his trauma, the whole thing. Man, I love the fact that it wasn't Jamie who was the one who fixed it, and not necessarily even fixed it, but it was Roger who helped him. It was Roger who helped Ian at this moment. And they both actively help each other.
Well, and you know what's interesting is that I was ready for Jamie to be like, listen, man, I lived in a cave for a really long time. Like, coming back to civilization myself was really weird. Like, I get it, you know, like being in a house and a bed and food. I was ready for some of that because I feel like people may have forgotten if they haven't rewatched, you know, the previous seasons, like you forget Cave Jamie. Like Cave Jamie would get this conversation. And I felt like in that one moment, Jamie didn't, like he was like, oh, was the bed not great? And I was like, Cave Jamie. But remind you that if you're not used to a bed, it's probably really weird. Like, do you remember when he came out and he hadn't talked?
Right.
And he was trying to interact with Jenny. Like, it was so hard for him. So I would have loved to see something like, oh, yeah, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
You remember when I lived in a cave? But Jamie is such a great uncle to Ian. And it was very reminiscent. And now you see why it was so important for that scene to have happened. For Jamie to have those moments earlier with Ian, you know, as they're sitting there in the graveyard, having that bonding, because they do need to have this moment, these moments when they come back together.
Sure.
So we've got the mourning of Murtaugh, who we'll probably never bring up again. Like, can we just mourn that fact? because Murtaugh's dead, and yeah. Murtaugh in the storyline wasn't even supposed to live this long, is this pretty much the end of mentioning Murtaugh?
I mean, you'll still get it in passing, I think, here and there. Like, we just got a mention of Dougal last episode, right? I think you'll still get mentions. I wonder, though, if this is the last that we'll see of Jocasta. I don't know. Because I don't know what there's left for her if Murtaugh's not there.
I mean, she's like their closest relative, and she lives pretty close.
Yeah, I agree. But like,
they might FaceTime for, you know, a birthday or...
Well, you know, because they're social distancing.
Yeah. So I'm saying, like, they might...
I wonder, and I'm not saying that that is going to be the case. I just wonder if that will be the case. Just because I don't know what there's left for her to do, unless they cook something up for her. This would be a fitting goodbye, I think, for Jocasta.
Oh, you want it to be a bye Jocasta now that there's no more bye Ian?
Oh, I know. Should it be hey Ian? Hey Ian.
No, Ian does not get that kind of a...
What's he get now?
Sup Ian.
Sup Ian. Yeah, I like that.
With,
sup
like,
Ian.
What's up?
Yeah. Sup.
Sup. Just chilling with Rollo.
That might be my new shirt. Ian with all the garb and the mohawk and everything, it's going to say sup Ian. Or just sup with a question mark. Yep. That's what it's going to be.
I don't know if people will get this, Blake. I don't know if people will get this. All right. So we've got that going on. Marcelly. You know, I've loved Marcelly a lot this season. This episode, I did not.
How did you not? I loved everything about her. She's talking about life with Ian. She's like,
she should have taken everything. She should have taken the dang hangman out of the deck of cards. Okay? Like, first time, okay, Marcelly, like, first off, all right, your mom was telling everybody that Claire was a witch. How do you know how to do all this tarot card business, all right, little Missy? And you even asked Claire if she's a witch. Watch yourself, because you're the one who keeps getting the lover card and keeps giving Roger the hangman card, okay? Somebody's going to be a witch, it's you, Marcelly. But she hands it, you know, she's doing all the cards, and it's the hangman. You know what? It's already awkward, okay? You already had a really awkward dinner with Ian. Let's just take the hangman card, put it to the side, and reshuffle without that one in the deck, Marcelly.
You know what? We're just gonna...
We already know.
That's basically the Joker card. We know that.
We know he's been hung.
Sensitive.
Right? The fates, the witchy Wiccan wizards, I don't even know. They don't need to tell us the hangman card is important right now. Let's put that aside and reshuffle.
Just give it a flick.
However, her moment with Ian, where she's sitting down and we touch upon some awkward moments, right? Mm-hmm. But I just loved how she could just talk to a rock, man.
Oh yeah.
Marcelly can, you know, she just scoots her kid aside, talks about how she's gonna be having this third one, notices that Ian's quiet, and she talks about the good old days. The good old days at Lollybrock, eating potatoes. Potatoes. All right. Like, just talking about family, because you know that they played, you know, some games together.
Sure.
They would leave little sidewalk chalk messages for each other. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying this because this is what me and my neighborhood friends do. But, you know, just like kicking it back, because we need to be also reminded that Marcelly and Ian grew up in the same area.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
They played. She knew his sister was mischievous. Like, this is a thing. So even though she can't connect with him here and now as a Mohawk Ian, you know, Marcelly's had a lot. I mean, think about it. They went on that massive voyage to go find him. You know, he had all these bonding moments with Fergus. Mm-hmm. And she's had her entire childhood. I mean, let's be real. If anybody's been together the longest, it was probably like he was known each other the longest. One of the pairings would be Marcelly and Ian.
Sure, absolutely. Do you feel weird about Fergus just like kind of being there? And is he like the new Ian?
Oh, he is the new Ian.
I think he's the new Ian.
He needs to step it up, because he and Marcelly make some freaking magic happen. I don't mean between the sheets, okay?
There's a lot of that happening.
So much.
How many barons is it going to take, Mr. Fergus Fraser? Oh.
So when Marcelly is sitting down with Ian, it reminded me of me. Like, if I saw someone just sitting down by themselves. This is a thing they do at kids' schools when kids actually went to school. They would have this like bench. It was called a buddy bench. Okay. They didn't have it when we grew up. Okay. In the 80s and 90s, if you were a kid who was alone, oh, well, sucks to be you.
Sucks to suck. Bro.
Okay. That was me. Anyway, but now they have these things called the buddy bench. And you sit down if you're alone and you have nobody like kick a ball with and nobody's playing with you. And then nice kids need to know to look for kids sitting on the buddy bench alone. And you go and you sit next to them and you ask them to come play. That's their way of saying, like, will someone come play with me? And basically, Marcelie saw Ian sitting on a stoop
on the buddy bench
as him sitting on the buddy bench. And she just went. She was like, I'm an extrovert. I've got this, man. I would actually love to sit. Because you know what I was just doing last week? Freaking smoking up locusts. Okay? I am third trimester pregnant. And people, I'm not supposed to be touching some like voodoo poisonous herb. But people had no problem sticking me out in a smoking field. I'm going to sit. She probably looks for every person on a buddy bench that she can find. I'm going to sit. And when people ask me, Marcelia, why are you not working? I'm going to say, I'm doing my job. I'm doing the buddy bench job. Back off.
Oh, man.
But yeah, Fergus.
Oh, Mary, keep going.
Let's hope that Fergus. Let's hope that Fergus has some moments because he may be the new by Ian. Just the extra guy with a wooden hand that we think is clapping.
Boom, boom. Let's talk about Lord John real quick.
He needs to get in trouble. Fergus needs to get in trouble for handing a paper that was already written on with Dr. Rowling's stuff.
Do you think anything will come of that? I mean, I know you already know, but like in terms of the show, like...
Fergus,
dude, something's got to come of that. Come on, man.
He didn't even have like a little reprimand, like, buddy, next time you take paper, please don't take paper off of Claire's desk that she's written on.
Right.
Find a new piece of paper. Heck, this house is so big, you could probably scrape off a piece of wood shaving. That would be perfectly fine. No one would notice some wood was missing.
Oh, man. Just come on, man. You know?
Adso. How do we, you know, Adso is the new buy, Ian.
I just don't care about Adso. I don't get it. I don't understand it. What the hell is the deal with it? It's just a gray cat. It's all it is.
He's beautiful.
He ain't that beautiful.
I will tell you one thing that Blake and I also talked about during this episode that we paused.
What's that?
Okay, so we paused for your candlelight thing.
Yes.
And we'll start wrapping this up. We paused for your candlelight moment of beauty.
Yep.
Then I paused when Jamie, actually, he wasn't. It was either that time when they were talking with the candlelight or when they were in bed and Claire took Adso off the bed when, like, a real cat mom would just move the cat to her feet. Mm-hmm. That's right. Uh-oh. We have someone waking up.
Oh, no.
This may be wrapped up a lot sooner than we thought. Let me see. We have to be quiet. 3 seconds. Three. It's like thunder. Two. Do they fall back asleep? One. We're okay.
I think we're good.
Okay. So I said to Blake, this is the moment that James Fraser is probably sitting there saying, you know what? We made a really good choice not keeping the baby.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Can you imagine if Claire right and Jamie were juggling a baby at this time? Like, there he was like, oh my God, you know, it'd be so cool having a baby. And that's kind of what it's like when you're like, you know what I really want? I want to get chickens in a chicken coop. And then you
nope.
I haven't gotten any chickens. I still desperately want chickens.
You're not getting
But
chickens.
It's not like you're getting sea monkeys. Okay. You're not just getting a beta fish. You're getting a baby. And there was Jamie being like, yeah, but wouldn't it be cool to have a baby? Claire knew what the future would be like. All right. She mm-hmm. knew what it'd be like. And at that very moment, I was thinking, Jamie's probably like, we dodged a bullet.
Right.
You know, like we've got a lot of stuff going on right now, man.
Yep.
It's a good thing we're having a bairn.
The other thing, the other time we paused too, mm-hmm. was to talk about how great of a gift giver Lord John is.
Oh. So first off, he's always at all the weddings. That's where he's been.
Every wedding he's ever been, like he is there.
He gets invited to weddings because he gives the best gifts.
Absolutely. You want that gift.
You're not even his friend and you're like, oh my God, I just get laundry baskets and like gift cards from people. But Lord John Grey, I hear he hands out astrolabes.
Astrolabes.
Whatever.
Astrolabes.
You're welcome.
Shame.
That's true love.
Gotta copyright that.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah. He gives the best gifts. And there he is. He did have this one weird moment, though. So, like, Bree's looking at it, and she's like, oh, I can tell the time and the direction. How cool. And he leans in a little close.
Yeah.
And like, I was like, whoa. Are you trying to smell her?
Like, what are you doing?
When you rewatch it, you'll see. I'm like, are you a vampire going in for a bite? Because I know that you're not interested in her. Like, I know you guys have this amazing... Bree and Lord John Grey have, like...
great chemistry.
Oh, my God. Such a great relationship. Yep. And I love that he just shows up for dinners. He probably had a weekend off from his wedding plans.
Yeah, you know what
his
it was.
His wedding calendar
I
was
bet
free.
You the wedding got canceled because of bad weather.
Oh, that was it.
Because, you know, because I'm sure he probably...
Probably because of the battle, you know?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, people weren't too 100% sure.
Whoever, the groom died. I don't know. But he had his calendar free, and he was like, I know where I'm going to go. I'm going to go for some good food.
That's why he's showing up so randomly.
And I've got gifts aplenty, okay? I've got who's it's and what's it galore. You want thingamabobs? I've got 20, all right? Here he comes showing up, and he's like, all right, I'm here to bring a note that Governor Tryon feels really bad that he hung your son-in-law. So here's 5,000 acres of land. And yeah. Bree's like, I don't want it.
Hey, but it's a really big deal.
Well, that's what Lord John Grey says. He's like, you may want to rethink that, bestie. Like, as your bestie, I'm just going to give you a heads up.
Somebody asks here, where do you think Lord John shops?
Oh.
Where do you think he shopped? Because I don't see him as a Bed Bath & Beyond person.
I don't see him as an Amazon person.
He is. No, 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 no. He, Lord John only shops at local, like, businesses.
Oh, my God. He actually goes to, like, Martha's Vineyard, and he goes, like, to shop to shop.
Oh, yes.
Or, like, you know, those little, like, precious little, like, island towns where they have, like, carefully curated gift shops. Like, that's literally what it is, a carefully curated gift shop. And he knows his peeps.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And he tells them, like, listen, these are the weddings I've got lined up. Hook me up with some options.
I bet you Lord John gets access to the stuff in the back.
Yeah.
Like, if he doesn't see it on the shelf, they're like, no, 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 it's okay. Come back here.
All right. Let's get off Lord John Grey and his gift giving.
I don't think I ever can.
I know.
He's too fabulous. So he's amazing.
So here we go. That's pretty much the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Roger is talking again, very scruffily, but he's talking again. Ian has realized whatever he was trying to dodge a bullet for, literally out of drinking some poisonous stuff, he's dodged.
Mm-hmm.
But not really. It's still going to haunt
him. I like that head fake, too. You they build it out to make you think that it's Roger who took the hemlock, that it's Roger who was going to put an end to it. But the head fake was, it wasn't Roger, it was actually Ian. And of course, you could see it coming the whole time. The one thing that I think I'm a tad uncomfortable about is, well, yeah, all right, I'll just say, I'll do it now. I'm a little uncomfortable, I think, with Matt Roberts at the, like, oh, hey, let's talk about the episode, when Matt Roberts is trying to convince you to watch it a second time, where he's like, yeah, you're gonna need to watch this again.
There, I mean, we've done that. We've suggested to people to rewatch things.
Yeah, but I think as the showrunner, you should say, this is my creation, here it is. Take from it what you will. Like, there it is. Watch it.
But I would say...
And if you want to watch it again, I don't need to tell you. I don't need to do anything for you. You just do it.
I would say that watching it a second time, for anyone who didn't like the black and white bits, it may help.
I mean, yeah, I agree with you. But I think as the showrunner, he's like, oh, they have to convince you that everything is, like, it's so cinematic. You need to watch this again because you're probably not going to get everything. You're going to be too emotional. Like, I don't know. I just feel like it's pandering a little. Well, not pandering, but it's just like trying to convince you how important this all is. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I'm trying to convince you how great we did. You know, if you did great, my dad always used to say, if you go into work and you got to tell somebody you're the boss, you ain't the boss. And I feel like the same thing. If you did great work, let it be.
If it's a great episode, people are rewatching it anyway.
Right.
This was a great episode. We're rewatching it anyway, Matt Roberts.
Yeah.
Dinner fash.
So I just, I don't know.
Don't hate on him. I'm just saying, dinner fash, honey. Dinner fash.
Yeah, well, so it is what it is. I felt a little uncomfortable.
Can I say something?
Sure, absolutely.
Matt Roberts and Meryl Davis are in the same exact outfit for each of these after episode things, and it pisses me off.
Why?
Because you could tell that they were just like, all right, let's just do this on a Friday afternoon, crank these puppies out. We're going to quickly talk about each episode.
Yeah.
And I just felt like Ron Moore would be like in a different chair.
Absolutely.
With a different drink, different outfit. Like you could tell that he was like, all right, next Thursday, come on over. We're going to have, Terry's going to like cook up a nice chicken and we're going to watch the episode and enjoy it.
Terry doesn't cook.
Yes, she does.
No, she does not.
Yes, she does.
Terry does not cook.
She's an excellent cook.
She goes to Stop and Shop and gets the rotisserie chickens.
You are the worst. No, she doesn't. She's an excellent cook. She's talked about it before.
I'm sure she has.
She's excellent. And not like I act like I've eaten her food. She is excellent. She talked about it on the interview that we shared.
Sure.
On the podcast episode.
Whatevs.
She's had some of the cast over and they would like cook for them in their house in Scotland.
All right. You got anything else about this episode, my love? Anything else you want to talk about?
No.
No? Okay. Yeah, well, then let's do the Outlandish Theory of the Week. You ready?
Yes.
All right, let's do it. Okay, so now that we've had Roger go through this whole scenario, the fact that he is alive, by the way, I knew that he was alive. There's no way they're going to kill him. It just wasn't going to happen. He's too big of a character for them to kill.
Captain Obvious.
Well, no, you weren't saying that last 2 weeks ago when I was saying it, and you're like, I don't know.
Captain Obvious.
So I'm triple stamping a double stamp here. Okay, you ready? Roger is going back to the future. He absolutely is, because he's got to get away.
Marty McFly?
Absolutely Marty McFly.
Okay.
He has to go back to the future because he's got to take his family away from all of this. It's going to be too hard for him. And here is the real outlandish theory of the week. This is the big one. You ready?
Drum roll.
They're going to find out by season's end that Jimmy can travel through the stones. And that is what is going to propel them for next season to go back to the future, because they got the revolution coming. It's going to happen relatively soon. They know it's
not
coming.
Not really relatively. Yeah. Well,
it's going to happen. And because of that, Roger's going to be like, dude, I'm getting out of Dodge. I'm out of here. I can't go through all this stuff again. And he's going to take Brianna and Jemmy and any future kids they may or may not have. I don't know. I imagine they probably will. And they're going to go back. They're going to go back to the future and get out of Dodge, because there is no way after this experience. He himself was saying, I was a historian and my own ancestors tried to kill me. My purpose is not here. My purpose is about history. I'm a changed man. I'm different. But I don't know what I am here. I can't keep going. So I guarantee you that because of this trauma, Roger is, I'm out of here. And especially, God only knows what happens between he and Bonnet. Because that's coming too. And I think that's the purpose for Lord John, because Lord John is going to be the one that gets them the in on how to get to Bonnet. Like, he's going to figure it out, and he's going to play a major part in this. So...
with a gift.
With the best gift you could ever imagine.
Oh my God.
What?
He's going to give them like a weapon gift, right? Wouldn't that be cool? Like, you think this is a paper knife? Watch.
Nope. Ching.
Someone said he shops the Sharper Image.
No, he doesn't do that catalog stuff. No.
No, you go in the store and sit in the chairs.
So that is my outlandish theory. Marvin, what do you give me?
I think more Williams and Sonoma.
Oh, yes.
If he were to do a chain store, it would be Williams and Sonoma.
Yeah, because Williams and Sonoma is a chain, but
it's
not.
You just got really loud.
It's not too chainy.
It's like you were so excited about Williams and Sonoma.
I was.
I don't even think you've ever actually been inside that store.
I have been in there when I got my home beer making kit. You're welcome.
That went well.
That's true. Marvin, you gonna give me an intro? What are we doing?
Interesting, Blake.
Mock me.
Please hang up and try again.
All right, final thoughts. My love, what do you got? Final thoughts.
That's my final thought. Interesting.
What? Interesting, that's it?
That's it, man.
My final thought.
I'm pumped about the rest of this season.
Okay, we are now the beginning of the final act.
The final countdown.
No. We save that for the penultimate episode.
Okay, well, I'm just saying.
That is an Outlander cast, Mary and Blake tradition. You always play the final countdown on the penultimate episode. That's how it goes.
Yeah, I'm singing it.
You can't do it.
Why am I stuck with you? I need more friends in my house.
This is the beginning of
I need another adult to talk to.
The final act. And it is a fantastic way to begin the
and
final
Disney
act.
Disney references.
Oh, my God.
No, I don't need you to play the music. I was singing. Just let me sing.
this is a fantastic way to begin the final act and how the story is going to be propelled. And I loved the silent film. I really loved it.
You know what else I loved?
What?
Bear Flair. Bear McCree killed it in this episode.
Oh, playing Clementine in the background while Roger and Bree are talking to each other.
The whole episode, he killed it.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what I love too? Clementine was on a clarinet, and I'm really trying to see like when they play clarinet, if they're only playing it for Bree, like when it's Bree related or Roger related, like people in the future. I'm trying to see like when they're adding in the clarinet, like if it's like the clarinet is played in memory of Frank as well.
Yeah, right.
You know, I'm trying to see if the clarinet ever really comes as a solo instrument elsewhere. I don't know. It's just that it stood out a lot to me. But Bear McCreary nailed it in this
episode.
When they play
the theme for Bree, that usually has a clarinet too.
And that's why I feel like it runs, even though she's not biologically Frank's.
Yeah, but
like,
he's daddy.
I feel like, yeah. He's daddy. Yeah, so I feel like the clarinet.
That's a part of Brie.
Yeah.
That's a part of her. Okay, that's it. That's
I'm
it.
All done.
All right, let's close this bad boy out. Let's do it.
Looking for shows to watch, Blake and I recommend several during your time at home.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we've actually podcasted about several shows. And specifically, we've talked about The Leftovers in this episode.
Correct.
And I'll be real with you. It's not like super duper uplifting. Like, it's not something funny that you watch before you go to sleep. It's not like watching The Good Place or Parks and Rec. Like, you're not necessarily going to laugh, but it is going to challenge you, and it's going to be a really thought-provoking one to watch. And our companion podcast that goes along with it, which you can find at maryandblake.com, a lot of people have found useful when they watch The Leftovers. We've
Absolutely.
Actually had amazing interviews with most of the cast of The Leftovers, the creator, the author of the book, tons
writers,
and tons of
directors, yeah. actors.
So if you are looking for something, I would highly recommend watching that. It was on HBO, so if you have HBO included in your package, check that out. We do have a lot of other things that we talk about at maryandblake.com, and I also want to recommend that you check out outlandercast.com. That, of course, is the home of Outlander Cast, the podcast. We have previous episodes in case you're new to Outlander. You want to check out some of our previous interviews there that we've had with cast and crew. We also have a fantastic team of bloggers who keep content fresh and fun all season long and throughout Droughtlander. So if you're not already on the Outlander Cast listserv, know that you can sign up at outlandercast.com, and that way you can be sent an email pretty much like once a week that gives you the latest podcast episodes and the latest blog episodes, blog pieces, so that way you can kind of stay in the know.
Yes, absolutely. And make sure you check out all the other podcasts that we do too, including our Hamilton podcast that we mentioned earlier. You can even check out our Gilmore Girls podcast, our Game of Thrones podcast. We did a podcast limited series for the final season of Game of Thrones. Had a lot of fun doing that. And also, too, go to OutlanderCastClan.com, where you can get all the great benefits that are available to you from Mary and I, whether it is extra podcast episodes, Blake's book club, early access to episodes, our show notes, free swag, the Crown podcast that we have. There's a ton of great perks that you can get there, including being with all the nerds that are there. All the nerds that have that facilitate that community are
said in a loving way. Yeah, we're all nerds. We're all Outlander religious. But honestly, OutlanderCastClan.com is a place that you can go to support us. I mean, when you think about PBS, your local, you know, PBS station or whatever, or your local newspaper, it's like supporting creators that way. Yes. So if you've never become a patron of a creator, that's what it is. Going to OutlanderCastClan.com, as little as $2 a month. If you're not going out and buying your coffees on your way to work anymore, know that as little as $2 a month makes the biggest difference for us. It allows us to keep the content going, even times as difficult as this. It keeps our website going. So we want to thank everyone at OutlanderCast.com, all of the patrons, honestly, from the bottom of our hearts, especially in trying times like this. It is more important than ever for us to be able to come together as a community and continue to pump out the content. So I want to take a moment to thank our most generous supporters at OutlanderCast.com, starting off with the associate producers: Angie, Candy, Carolyn, Celine, Christine, and Dawn, Diane, Jeffrey, Jennifer, Karen, Marilyn, Maureen, Patricia, Siobhan, Stephanie, and Valerie. Our co-producers: Amanda, Anley, Barbara, Dana, Janet, Keelan, Laurie Ellen, Marianne, Meredith, Rainel, Sharon, Tina, and Whitney. As last but not least, our executive producers: Ann, Bobby, D, Jen, Katie, Kirsty, Martha, Nadra, Peg, and Sarah. Thank you guys so much.
Yes, thank you guys so much. And for those of you, the hundreds of you watching us right now live, and for those of you who are listening to us on the podcast later on, go to OutlanderCastClan.com. We will actually be doing, right after this episode, our After Doc episode. The After Doc show is one of the highlights of OutlanderCastClan.com. So head over to OutlanderCastClan.com, become a Klansman level patron, and you'll be able to access that right then and there.
Yep. But so we're going to be doing that in about 10 minutes. So once again, if you are a member of OutlanderCastClan.com, we'll be heading to After Dark in 10 minutes. And if not, you can join it so you can see it in next time. For now, my name is Mary.
My name is Blake.
And you've been listening to OutlanderCast.